Ok. Buenas noches. Parece que todos hablan inglés aquí, ¿no? Does anybody not speak English? ¿Hay alguien que no hable, inglés? Bueno, gracias por venir. Yo me llamo Sarco Guerrero y yo voy a hablar algo, poquito, mucho, sobre lo que está pasando en Arizona ahora. Yo soy nacido en Arizona, de Mesa. I'm from Mesa, Arizona. I was born and raised there. My family, we were the Mexicans that never came from Mexico. Somos los mexicanos que nunca inmigramos de México a los Estados Unidos. Hemos estado aquí en el suroeste por muchos años. De parte de mi abuelita, su familia viene de San Juan Capistrano, viene de los indios que fueron esclavizados por los españoles, Christianized por los españoles, y hicimos el catedral de San Juan Capistrano. So on my grandmother's side of the family, we were the Mission Indians of San Juan Capistrano that were taken off our land, missionized, and enslaved to build the San Juan Capistrano Mission. And I'll get back to our connection in Arizona. Cuando en 1300 antes de Cristo, el área del suroeste de los Estados Unidos, sobre todo donde se juntan tres ríos, el río Gila, el río Salado y el río Colorado, toda esa área se llamaba por los indios Aztlán. The name of the Colorado, Salt, and Gila rivers was called Aztlán by the majority of the Indians who lived in that area. The term Aztlán refers to a geographical characteristic, the land of reeds, tall grasses that grow along the rivers. Aztlán quiere decir el lugar de los ríos donde hay mucha hierba grande que está creciendo por los ríos. La palabra azteca viene de la palabra Aztlán, o sea, los aztecas venían de Aztlán. So the word Aztec comes from the word Aztlán. 1300 años antes de Cristo, había un grupo de gente indígena que llegaron a Aztlán y establecieron una civilización. At that time, 1300 years before Christ, a group of Indians called the Hohokam. We call them the Hohokam. They're actually called the Hohokam. And they established themselves in that part of what is now Phoenix and Maricopa County. And they were there for over until 1200 AD. Estuvieron ahí hasta 1200 después de Cristo en lo que hoy llamamos el Valle del Sol. Esa gente era una gente muy increíble. No solamente sembraban muchas plantas con mucho éxito, también eran ingenieros. Hicieron un sistema de irrigación muy avanzado. They were engineers that built an amazing system of canals that spread for hundreds of miles throughout the valley. And the canals were 10 feet deep and 30 feet wide. Los canales extendían por cientos de millas. Eran 10 pies de ancho, de profundidad, y 30 pies de ancho, o sea, muy grande. Y eso hicieron con herramienta de piedra y de madera. También hicieron edificios altos de 3 o 4 pisos de adobe, bien construidos. Habían muchos, ¿cómo se llama? Canchas de fútbol. Del mismo tipo que existen en todo Centroamérica, sobre todo entre los, la gente mexica y la gente maya. Eso quiere decir que había un intercambio muy grande con la, los indígenas del suroeste, con la gente antigua de México, ¿verdad? Y mucho cambio de material, mucho comercio de hierbas, de comida, de piedras y de plumas. Si no saben que las plumas eran la cosa más preciosa en la vida de los indios antiguos, sobre todo los aztecas y los mayas. So there was a great trade between the people of the Southwest and the people who lived in Mexico, the Maya, the Mexica, the Toltec. All of those people had, not only did they share commerce with the people of the Southwest, they also shared a common language. It's called Uto Azteca, a language that we now refer to as El Mexicano or El Nahuatl. And this is a language that's still spoken today by, I think, 1 million people in central Mexico. It is also spoken by tens of thousands of people in the Southwest, for example, the Tohono O'odham, the Akimel O'odham, the Pinamatapical, the Hopi, as well as the Southern California Mission Indians.
And the Utes of Utah.
And the Utes of Utah as well. Cuando llegaron los españoles, encontraron a mucha gente, ¿no? Muchos tribus de gentes. Cuando llegaron a Phoenix, hallaron los O'odham, the Pima and the Papago, they call them, with a very derogatory term called, called them bean eaters. And they were called the river people, the Akimel O'odham, and the Tohono O'odham, the desert people. These people were descendants of the Hohokam. Descendants because the Hohokam, they left the Southwest and migrated south to Mexico. Los Hohokam salieron del Valle del Sol de Arizona y se emigraron para el sur, se fueron a México. Se supone que esa gente eran los Aztecas. It's believed that these people were the Aztecs who migrated to what we now know as Tenochtitlan in central Mexico. The O'odham people were farmers as well. Eran, sembraron también los O'odham. When the Spanish came, they said these people could grow better crops with less water than anybody they had seen anywhere in their travels. Que esa gente podrían sembrar y cosechar más comida con tan poquita agua que era increíble para ellos. Eran muy pacíficos los indios. They were very, very peaceful Indians. When the Spanish came, they welcomed the Spanish. And later on, when the white man came, not only did they welcome them, but they gave more than they should have given. At that time, when the Spanish came, they named all of northern Mexico, all the way up to Utah, Pimería Alta, la tierra de los Pimas. They called it the land of the Pimas because the Pimas inhabited all of the Sonoran Desert, northern Mexico, and all the way up to Utah. Después, cuando todo se hizo México, when it became what we now know today as Mexico, it was referred to as Mexico Grande. Big Mexico, right? The largest part of Mexico was Mexico Grande, el norte, la tierra, lo que nosotros ahora llamamos el suroeste de los Estados Unidos, no, the Southwest United States, was Pimería Alta, and then was Mexico Grande. In around 1870, I think it was, 1870, los indios, los Tohono O'odham, the Akimel O'odham, were living peacefully, tens of thousands of people farming all along the valley. Miles y miles de indios vivían ahí. También vivían muchos mexicanos. At that time, also was a lot of Mexicans there that were displaced, detribalized, colonized, and were in many cases running from the conquest of Mexico. Muchos mexicanos llegaban también. Acuérdense que había mucho comercio con todos los indios de ese área. ¿verdad? Entonces muchos mexicanos estaban mezclados con los indios, muchos se quedaron y muchos llegaron de Sonora, de Sinaloa, de otras partes, siguiendo a los españoles y buscando cómo vivir, you know, después de mucha muerte, mucha violencia en México. In 1870, the Akimelotan found a group of people dying in the desert. They were in covered wagons. They had never seen covered wagons before. And these people were dying of hunger and dying of thirst. They were the Mormons. Llegaron los mormones de Utah, que también estaban huyendo de persecución, ¿verdad? Querían hacer su religión, querían buscar su tierra prometida. The Mormons themselves were looking for their promised land, right? So when they came to Arizona, the Indians found them, they nursed them back to life, and they gave them some land to live on. The land was a piece of land that was flat above the riverbed. It was a mesa, a table. And that's what the Indians called it, la mesa. And so the Mormons, they gave them a piece of land on the mesa to live and to grow their crops. los mormones, los indios, les dieron tierra, ¿verdad? No solamente eso. Estaban protegiendo a ellos contra los apaches que estaban atacando, no solamente a los blancos que estaban llegando, pero también estaban atacando a los mexicanos que llegaban. Estaban atacando a todos, pero los indios estaban protegiendo a ellos. Se hicieron amigos de los mormones. Pero si tú ves los libros de los mormones ahora, si lees los libros de ellos, ellos te dicen que cuando llegaron, no había nadie. The Mormons in their literature, they tell you that when they came to the valley, there was nobody there. That they had the impression that this land was given to them by God. Creían que esa tierra era de ellos, el paraíso de ellos, el Edén de ellos, que era un regalo de Dios. Porque había agua, había pescados, había gente. Bueno, no decían que había gente, pero sí había gente. Había indios y mexicanos para reconstruir el sistema de canales que existía. Ellos querían esa agua. Querían mucha esa agua. Porque con esa agua, en medio del desierto, ellos iban a poder sembrar y cosechar y vivir el sueño de ellos en el paraíso. Se hicieron muchos muy amigos de los indios, de los great friends with the Indians and converted the Indians. And then they started taking more land. Querían más tierra. Mandaron decir a sus amigos en Utah que aquí hay tierra para nosotros. Esta tierra es nuestra tierra. They sent word to Utah, come one, come all. This is our promised land. They took more and more and more land from the Indians. Confiscaron más y más tierra. Tomaron más agua. Había suficiente agua para todo el mundo. Por cientos de años, suficiente agua. Cuando, durante épocas de la ¿cómo se llama? ¿Sequía?
Sequía.
During times of drought, there was still water because they knew how to conserve water. The rivers, the beavers built dams. There were many ponds and lagoons full of fish. Era un paraíso, era un lugar increíble en aquel tiempo. Pero seguían sacando el agua. They kept taking more and more and more and more water. Until finally, al final del siglo, around the end of the century, they built dams to stop the water. To send so that the Indians would no longer have access to any water. And all the water would go to the white farmers. O sea, sacaron completamente todo el agua de los indios. Los indios ya no tenían agua. Los indios eran del río, vivían del río. La cultura de ellos, la espiritualidad de ellos, todo era el abuelo, el río, ¿verdad? Pararon el agua. En cambio, dieron a los indios lard, manteca, sal, azúcar, harina, flour, y alcohol. That's what they gave the Indians in exchange for the water. Y ya no tenían más tierra. Entonces, ya con eso, comenzaron la idea de construir el Roosevelt Dam at the turn of the century, about the time during the Revolution in Mexico, durante la Revolución en México, con esa idea de construir más y más y más, ¿cómo se llama? Empresas.
Represas
también. Más represas. No querían dejar ni una gota de agua llegar al Golfo de México, de California. They didn't want to let one drop of water reach the Sea of Cortez. The Seti Indians, the Yaqui Indians, all the people who live, they didn't want them to have any water. They wanted to stop the flow of water right there. Les valía poco los demás. Okay? Y después de todo eso, cuando estaban construyendo la represa, eso fue durante la guerra en México, la revolución en México, los yaquis, los indios de Sonora, también fueron expulsados de Sonora. The Yaquis in northern Mexico, the Yaqui Indians, were also a river people. They were being displaced by the Spanish because they lived in the richest agriculture region in all of North America, in el Valle del Rio Yaqui, the Yaqui River Valley. So they were being deported. The Yaquis were being deported and fled to the U.S. Fue durante esa época que mi abuelo, Don Gumercindo Payán de Castro, un indio del sur de California, vino a Arizona, corriendo de la matanza de los indios en California. My great-grandfather came to Arizona because the Indians, after the gold rush, there was no more gold, they were being indiscriminately killed to take over their lands. And at that time, those indios were Mexicanized. They had been Mexicans now for hundreds of years, right? And they spoke Spanish, they were Mexicanized, they intermarried con los Mexicanos. Él vino a Casa Grande y por fin consiguió un trabajo trabajando en la construcción de la presa Roosevelt Dam. So that's how my family got established in the valley. Así llegamos nosotros a Mesa, Arizona. Llegó mi abuelo, Pedro Guerrero, de Solomonville, Arizona. Mi abuelo, que también nació en Arizona, no vino de México. Se fue a vivir en México. Fue secuestrado de su papá. Fue criado en México, pero regresó a Arizona a buscar a su familia. Cuando llegó, se murió su mamá. Estaba solo un huérfano con 12 años, mi abuelo. Él fue a vivir en Mesa, Arizona, y vino siendo uno de los ciudadanos más importantes, más populares, un hombre de negocio muy importante en Mesa. So my grandfather his first language was English, but he forgot English. His first language then was Spanish, and then it was Ootam, the Papago language. He learned the indigenous language, and then he learned English. So he was trilingual. So he became very important for the Mormons in Mesa. Él era una persona muy importante porque hablaba tres idiomas. Podía hablar con los mexicanos y con los indios también, y con los gringos al mismo tiempo. Se hizo un ciudadano muy, muy importante en Mesa. No era pobre, era un hombre de negocio. Tuvo su familia, crió a mi papá y a mis tíos. Cuando yo fui criado, éramos muy pocos mexicanos en Mesa, porque nadie vino de México. Éramos de segunda, tercera generación en Mesa de mexicanos. Éramos chicanos. Después usamos la palabra chicano para decir lo que éramos, ¿no? Pero cuando Cuando yo tenía como 10 años, más o menos, vivimos en un barrio muy pequeño mexicano, llegó una familia de blancos, y eran mormones, y eran pobres. Era la única familia blanca en nuestro barrio. So when I was about 10 years old, a white family moved to our Mexican neighborhood, very small group Mexican neighborhood, and they were poor Mormons. Y yo me acuerdo la primera vez, primeramente cuando nos estaban criando nuestros padres, nos decían que nosotros éramos americanos. Our parents told us we were Americans. You are Americans. You're born in this country. We're Mexicans and we're Indians, but we are now Americans. They wanted us to be proud of being Americans. That was important to them because they had been discriminated against so badly. They wanted us to be proud to be American. So when we went to school, the kids asked, what are you? Oh, we're Americans. No, you're not. You're Mexicans. We're not Mexicans. We're not from Mexico. You're Mexicans. Right? So, había mucha confusión porque éramos americanos, pero los gringos no nos dejaban ser americanos. Nos decían mexicanos. Decíamos nosotros que éramos americanos. When the white family moved in, there was one individual, the oldest in the family, two or three boys, a couple of girls. He was the bully. And when we would play football and baseball, he would always refer to us as dirty Mexicans. The first time I heard that word, dirty Mexicans, you know? And then lazy Mexicans, and a lot of other type of Mexicans. Pero me acuerdo mucho de eso. Me acuerdo de eso. Esa persona se llamaba Russell Pierce. Y Russell Pierce, hoy día, es el legislador que está pasando las leyes anti-inmigración en Arizona. Okay? So he became, Russell Pierce, this bully, became the legislator that is passing all of this anti-immigration legislation in Arizona. He first passed the English-only law. Fue él que promovió English only. Por muchos años estaba batallando para pasar esta ley anti-inmigratoria. He's the one who passed employer sanctions that they wanted to prosecute anybody who hired illegals. Pasaron una ley para hacer como es contra la ley, dar trabajo a los sin documentos. Fue él. Pero, y ahora, después de varios años que están implementando esa ley, han deportado cientos de personas, pero nada ha pasado con los patrones. Están libres, todos, hasta ahora. Y ahora están pasando la ley anti-inmigratoria en Arizona. Ahora, mucha gente habla que esta ley, que no están, que esta ley no quiere proteger los derechos de los sin documentos, ¿verdad? Pero nosotros, los mexicanos, los chicanos, estamos al lado de ellos. We're on the side of the undocumented, not because we're fighting for their civil rights, but for their human rights. We're fighting for our civil rights as Americans. And when I say us, I'm not only talking about American citizens like myself, but I'm talking about Native Americans as well, los indios también, that are also being stopped and detained, and in many cases arrested for suspicion of being Mexicans. And this is happening not only to Native Americans, but also Indians from India. People from India are being stopped, detained, and asked for their documentation, even though American citizens. And the law hasn't even passed. O sea, eso no es nada nuevo para nosotros en Arizona. Hemos vivido con esta justicia por años. Desde los tiempos de mi abuelo y mi tatarabuelo, mis tíos, mis tías. So para nosotros no es nada nuevo. La lucha continúa para nosotros. ¿Ok? Ahora, esta ley, no quiero hablar mucho de la ley porque he tratado de leer la ley, es muy complicado. I don't want to talk a lot because it's 20 pages or more. It's all in legalese and you can interpret that law any way you want. Anyway, right now there's an injunction against the law. It's going to be in court for years. Esta ley no va a pasar ahora por mucho tiempo porque está, ahora están peleando entre el gobierno federal y el estado de Arizona. Pero ahora quiero dejar a Carmen hablar un poco sobre el impacto de la economía, de lo que ha pasado.
Bueno, lo que quería decir antes, I'm going to interject a little bit, is like, Sarko's grandfather is the one who started Rosarita Beans, which became a national company. It's the first Mexican-American company in the United States. This is 1935. I'm sure you've gone to the supermarket and seen Rosarita Beans. That's his grandfather. So we're talking about the fact that this is a family that has made lots of contribution to the state of Arizona. They've also started the first sign company in the state of Arizona, Guerrero Lindsay Sign Company. There's a school named after Pedro Guerrero, and there's a park called Pedro Guerrero in Mesa, Arizona. And we are being discriminated against this law right now. My children are being stopped, asked for their papers. And this is the family we come from. The other thing, do you want to show the pictures or you want to show the articles first?
I'll show the articles first. Lo que queremos hacer también es no pintar algo tan negativo. Queremos buscar las cosas positivas. We don't want to talk about just the negative things. We want to talk about the positive things that can come from this law.
Oye, no le traducieron en español, ¿verdad?
No.
Oh, es que quería decir que el abuelo de Sarko fue un hombre muy importante en la ciudad de Mesa, Arizona. Es reconocido como uno de los pioneros fundadores de la ciudad porque él estaba allí cuando se fundó la ciudad en los años 30. Y él empezó la primera fábrica de comida mexicana, que fue la fábrica Rosarita, que empezó nomás haciendo frijoles enlatados y ahora hace toda una línea de comida. Si usted va a algún supermercado en Estados Unidos, se ve la comida Rosarita, es de su abuelo que empezó. Después él la vendió y se hizo una national. Pero de todos modos, y ahí en la ciudad de Mesa tenemos una escuela pública y un parque nombrados de Pedro Guerrero como reconocimiento de todas las cosas que su abuelo hizo para la ciudad. Y nuestros hijos, que se apellidan Guerrero, son los que están siendo como, no pueden ser deportados porque son americanos, pero los paran y les piden sus papeles. Entonces esa es la cosa que es el colmo, ¿no? Que eso esté pasando. Pero quiero leer un poco de lo que está pasando aquí. Ese señor...
This is the good news.
This is the good news. He talked about what's happening with the law. So... We lost 300,000 people in Arizona. 300,000 personas salieron de Arizona. Eran documentados o indocumentados, y hasta personas como nosotros estamos pensando, ¿qué estamos haciendo ahí? Queremos salir. That means 29 billion con el B, annually, es que va a perder el estado, 29 billones de dólares. La industria de construcción, que era la industria que más utilizaban los indocumentados, ya no existe. There's no construction happening in Arizona. The construction company. The hotel association is having a real hard time. No conventions are coming to Arizona. There's a national boycott. Y nadie viene a Arizona por el boycott nacional. Esto ha creado más que he says law has already created far more job, economic, and social problems than it solves. Que esta ley no soluciona ningún problema, pero ha creado más problemas económicos, más problemas sociales y más problemas de trabajo, porque no hay trabajo y ha creado todo un problema. Esta ley ha dividido familias. Esta ley, por ejemplo, los primos de Sarko, que son más gringos que Sarko, son de los gringos, apoyan la ley y nosotros, claro, que estamos en contra de la ley. Entonces, en nuestra propia familia tenemos discordias.
And by the way, gringos not a derogatory term. It's a term of endearment. Oh, well, not quite.
Y ese señor sugiere que nosotros podemos tener border crossing centers como Ellis Island en Arizona. Dice, usted viene a trabajar, ok, aquí está su permiso, pase a trabajar. Y le dan un permiso por un mes, por tres meses, por cuánto tiempo necesita. Es lo que necesitamos es cambiar la ley. We do need to reform immigration laws because it's not adequate to what we're doing right now, to our what our needs are. Okay, this is Russell Pierce, the guy who grew up with Sarko. His friend. Okay, let me show you another one over here.
What you look for, let me read this real Jim Bodine gave me this today.
No, it was somebody else. Oh, it was him. Frank.
John,
that's right.
John, okay. Oh, that's right. Just some good things I wanted. You know, they're building this wall. Quieren construir una pared muy grande allá en Arizona por toda la frontera. Pero él está diciendo que la mitad de la gente indocumentada viene por avión. Half of the undocumented that are here have come on airplanes. They didn't cross the border. They came legally, and then they overstayed in visa. Okay, so that makes the problem a lot more complicated. He also says this is Jorge Ramos, from Univision. He's una persona muy inteligente. He also says that he's completely convinced that the first Hispanic president has already been born. Que el primer presidente latino ya ha nacido aquí en Estados Unidos. Buena onda, ¿no?
Nomás cuestión de tiempo.
Y también dice que we are 15% of the population and we only have one senator, latino. Y dice que necesitamos 1,000 César Chávez. It is true. We had a César Chávez. Y es otro punto que quiero hablar. Another point I want to make later on. We'll talk about the positive things. Se murió César Chávez hace muchos años.
1993.
Pero todavía vive. César Chávez died in 1993. But César Chávez is still alive. And that's a good thing. We'll talk about that.
Well, I wanted to tell you that another thing that's happening right now is the next stop on immigration is they want to deny the children who are born here. They want to reform the 14th Amendment and be able to deny them becoming American citizens. So those are kind of the things that are happening on the far right, what they think they can do. And then I have to show you, let me see if I can find it, is the census. Yeah. I don't know where it is. Oh, okay. This is what's happening now in Phoenix, Arizona. A number of our friends, the artists, they put together an exhibition called SB 1070, an artist viewpoint. And this is what they're talking about, what is the art that they're doing. So one picture is worth 1,000 words. So this one was on CNN Living, Arizona. That's another thing positive about it, is we made, it's changing the text, but it's not changing the picture. I want you to see the picture. The pictures are amazing.
Well, anyway, getting back to Russell Pierce, now when he's asked to explain himself about this, about his being so adamant about passing this law, he says he's inspired by his Mormon religion. Él dice que está inspirado y motivado por su religión. Okay. Y también los mormones, estoy hablando generalmente, pero los mormones siempre votan por mormones. Es la ley de ellos. Mormons always vote for Mormons. Very difficult for them. They're almost demanding that they vote for Mormons. Y por eso está el poder. Ahora lo más positivo que hemos visto nosotros ahora, ya saben.
Todos son republicanos, por supuesto.
Sí.
Sí, claro. Pero últimamente hemos estado en protesta por, ¿qué? Meses, ¿no, Carmen?
Desde marzo.
Hay una protesta continua en Arizona. A continuous protest at all the government buildings, at the universities. People are being arrested now every day for civil disobedience. We've had marches of 50 to 70,000 people. Hemos tenido marchas por 50, 70 mil personas marchando. Gente bien, no quiero decir enojada. I don't want to use the word angry because I've seen frustration more than anger. You know, But not only that, instead of, we don't see the fear, we don't see the anger, what we see is the joy of coming together. Lo que hemos visto es la alegría de estar juntos, de estar marchando juntos, mano a mano, brazo a brazo, mexicanos con centroamericanos, con indios americanos, con gente de Asia, con los indios, con los hindú, con los negros y con los blancos. That's the beautiful thing we've seen, is the people coming together, blacks, white, Native Americans, people of all different congregations. For a long time, our battle was getting the congregations to come forward. Las iglesias no querían unirse a la batalla, because so many of them have a lot of Republicans in their congregation, and they didn't want to get involved. But now they see how big the injustice has become, and we have a lot of churches coming out to join us. That's the beautiful thing. Y uno de nuestros líderes, Alfredo Gutiérrez, que fue un senador, que es un hombre muy inteligente, y también anduvo mucho con César Chávez, one of our senators, very intelligent, was leading the protest, and one of the followers of Cesar Chavez says that our protests, more than anything else, have become a celebration of our unity, of our solidarity. And to me, that's the good sign. The other good sign is that we're marching through the streets, and the person who's leading us is Cesar Chavez. He's leading us. He set the example. Él nos dio el ejemplo de protestar, de marchar sin usar la violencia. He taught us, he indoctrinated us to march and make positive social change without the use of violence. And being all inclusive, including all people in our struggle. His struggle was not about Mexicans, poor whites, and Filipinos. His struggle was about all people. So Cesar Chavez is still leading the march in the paintings that we have of him, in his words that we carry along, sobre todo si se puede. Y el show mañana es sobre Cesar Chavez. Tomorrow night show that we're doing is about the life of Cesar Chavez. So we see what's happening in Arizona. Hopefully what's going on right now is going to be an example to the rest of America of what not to do. Okay? Esperamos que sea un ejemplo que no queremos hacer, que no queremos que no hagan los demás estados, porque muchos están hablando de pasar las mismas leyes. So we see this as a good example. When, and we're from Arizona, we're being hit really hard. My family, Carmen and I, porque somos artistas, we're artists. We're the first one to get hit. And but we support the boycott. We're telling you, if you can boycott Arizona, boycott Arizona. Tenemos que pagar el precio. Los pobres, para ellos siempre han sido pobres, ¿no? Están más pobres. Pero los de la clase media y los de la clase alta, ellos ahora van a sentir, ahora están experimentando lo que es sufrir el boycott. Well, she finds that, do you have any questions? I'd like to get your input now. We've said enough. Yes?
No, I just would like to point out that part of the reason that I'm against this proposition is that it revolves around color and ethnicity. When you have 11 million documented people, talking Canadians, you have a border, huge border, and nobody's trying to build a border of Abuela. We have Russians, we have people from Europe, people from all colors, but it's always the Mexican. That's to me what is unjust.
And that's why I told the story that I did, that this was Mexico. And when to the Mormons, there was nobody there. In other words, the Indios and the Mexicanos no cuentan por nada. People of color don't count. They'll work for you. You can enslave them. You can pay them low wages. And then they're discarded. They're disposable. And I say it jokingly, but to my Native American brothers and sisters and to people from India or even Asia, I tell them now, You're Mexicans now. You're just like that. Ustedes son Mexicanos ahora. Aunque sean de Japón o Indonesia, donde sea. They're all going to be treated the same. Because this law is not about, it's not an anti-Mexican law, it's an anti-people of color law. And it's an anti-American law. Because it's about the America's rights that we have. And we have a right to defend the human rights of people whose human rights are being violated. Let's
talk about Arpaio.
Ooh, Arpaio! We have the meanest sheriff in the country, Joe Arpaio, El Payaso, le decimos.
Who loves to trample on everybody's civil rights.
He's sadistic. Y lo vamos a mostrar ahora. Está muy loco y él dice, no importa lo que diga la ley, él va a seguir lo que él está haciendo. He's going to do whatever he wants. He don't care about the federal law. He's going to criminalize every undocumented person.
Okay, so talk.
Is he anyway related to Hitler?
This is what we do at the protestas. Okay? Yo hago la máscara de Joe Arpaio, ese es el panzón. Yo soy el diablo. Ese es Alfredo Gutiérrez, uno de los líderes. Pero en lo que llevamos a la protesta es la comedia. De todo, ¿no? We'd like to bring the comic relief. So here's me as the devil torturing a Mexican, and that's Jan Brewer, our governor.
Yeah. I'll send you the picture, yeah. Jim.
And they're in cahoots with the devil.
Yeah.
I'll just make mail you from
there. So the big heads, they can't talk. Las cabezonas no pueden hablar. Así que yo hablo el diablo, ¿no? Y yo voy hablando que yo voy a deportar a todos los mexicanos, a los negros, a los indios, a todos. ¿Verdad? Que Joe Arpaio es mi hombre. Y Janet es mi novia.
Mire, aquí está. Joe Arpaio hace que todos los prisioneros en el county de Maricopa usen sus pink underwears.
Yeah.
And he serves them green bologna for lunch every day.
It makes you live in tents.
Yeah, live in tents, 115 degrees in Phoenix. And they have to wear pink underwear. He's supposed to be the toughest sheriff and he doesn't care what the federal law is. He's going to follow. Now, while we're doing this, everybody's taking pictures. Everybody wants to take pictures with them. And then people come to defend the Mexicano. He's a student of Zarco. Yo no sé si tú lo conociste, Marcelino. Es del teatro. So, el Marcelino está, ay, Dios, ayúdenme. Entonces, vienen los Mexicanos y lo defienden y dicen a Arpaio todo lo que quieren decir. Y
they
dicen put
the word at Arpaio. They cuss at him. They yell at him. And so I have to defend him as the devil because he's doing my work. Right? And we didn't get a picture here, but there's another character. His name is J.T. Redding. He's a neo-Nazi. And he ran for city council in Mesa. And now he's going to run again for office. He shows up at the march in camouflage with an automatic weapon. They show up with automatic weapons, right? And behind them are dozens of riot gear police officers. I don't know if they're protecting the neo-Nazis or they're supposed to protect them from the neo-Nazis. So we went up to them as the devil. I said, there's my man, J.T. Redding, doing my dirty work. I love you, man. I love you. I love you. And they were so freaked out, these neo-Nazis, that they were just like, you know, just freaking out. And then the Mexicanos were yelling at me, you know, at the devil and yelling at Joe Arpaio. And the neo-Nazis didn't know what to say. But here you can see all the people coming out, protesting the pro.
And all the great poster, like this one, indocumentados y unafraid. No tengo miedo.
Yeah.
Soy indocumentado, pero no tengo miedo, porque lo que vale es la... El volumen de gente. We had over 50,000 people. This is March 29th.
See, this is we are indigenous people. Mexicans are finally beginning to understand that they're indigenous. They're displaced, but that doesn't make them not Indians. That doesn't make them illegal. This is our content. So in a way, a whole consciousness is being raised, right? We want our continent back. That doesn't mean we're going to throw everybody out and deport everybody. We don't do that. we've been able to live in harmony with other cultures for 500 years.
Well, what was beautiful is to see all the contingents come out, like the Koreans came out with their drums, and they had like a marching section of the march that was just all Koreans. And at first we said, well, why are they here? They're not documented. But guess what? They're brown like us. So they're being profiled. And then we had all kinds of people down in the white.
This is about as hostile as the science really got. You know what I mean? And you do see some of that. But mostly it was drumming.
There's a guy selling it. Sheriff Joe Piñatas. And people are buying them. They love to beat him. So like Sarko says, it was a celebration. People were mad, but we were beyond being mad. We were just having to laugh at the situation because you cannot believe this is 21st century. You cannot believe this is America. You cannot believe these are the people we voted for.
Was the youth, la juventud, la cantidad de jóvenes ahí, conscientes, marchando, argumentando los puntos de vista, el entendimiento que ellos tienen, la educación que ellos tienen. Es formidable, impresionante.
Look, John was awesome.
Is he elected or is he appointed?
He's elected. And he's elected every year with 70% of the vote.
70% of the vote.
So he thinks because he has 70% of the vote that he, you know, he's a media grabber. Anytime that there's going to be media there, he's there. Anytime he can drum up something, you know.
Every night he's on the news. Every night he's on the news, yeah.
Well, that must be why there's 70% or so every time I hear a statistic that is in favor of this law. It's the same folks who were voting this.
Who are voting for him and voting for Jen Brew. I mean, she was not elected. She was appointed because Janet Napolitano left. Janet would never have signed this law. He tried to pass through her, and she said no. When she signed the employer sanction law, we protested against her. And we were friends of her. We played at her 50th birthday party. We've known her ever since she was a lawyer before she even ran for because she was our attorney general for 2 terms, and she was our governor for 2 terms. But she was our Democratic governor with a Republican-led legislation. So she had a lot of problems in her hands. Oh, here, ese Mexicano vino y se sentó ahí con el otro. Y dijo, se vas a llevar a este, tiene que llevarme a mí también. So that was beautiful when he came up and sat there. Said, I want to be, you know, take it to jail. What's that?
Y eso que son elecciones como en los tiempos del Western.
Del Western.
No, Western.
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 Oh, Western.
Western
awesome.
Election.
Well, they've done a whole bunch of laws that have been completely unenforceable, like the employer sanction law. We've never been able to really get anybody on that law. A few hundred people were deported. Then they passed a law that for you to vote now in Arizona, you have to prove you're a citizen. Well, hello, you have to have your name on the roster.
If Obama runs again in Arizona, he has to show the state of Arizona his birth certificate.
Yeah, we were in the news a few months ago with the birther law. And then what nobody's talking about it is they passed a law in Arizona that anybody 21 years old or older can carry a concealed weapon without a license, without taking a course, without paying anything to the state. And we're bankrupt. We can't even maintain our schools, and we don't have money for our
police and fire.
Police and fire or medical care. No es estado ahora, si tú tienes 21 años, puede utilizar, puede salir, puede comprar una pistola y meter la pistola y a esconderla. Está con la pistola escondida, sin una licencia y sin pagar nada y sin tener un curso especial.
So, en Mesa, hace 5 años, Mesa se hizo un pueblo mexicano. 5 years ago, Mesa became a Mexican town. It was just unbelievable. The amount of Mexicans, the business that they brought, the culture they brought, the flavor they brought. They transformed a dying town into a thriving economic center. Pero les da rabia a los gringos ver a los mexicanos. They can't stand seeing a Mexican pushing a cart with 3 kids and pregnant. You see it all over here holding now. It's a joke, supposed to laugh. And I was in Home Depot one time, and you know, everything's bilingual, right? In English and Spanish, Walmart, everything. Everywhere you go, everything's bilingual. And this guy said to me, somebody was checking out and they were talking Spanish, right? And the person, you know, the cashier talking Spanish, the people talking Spanish. They go, I can't stand everybody speaking Spanish around here. Why does everything have to be written in Spanish? This is America. I said, they're not putting it in, they're not putting the Spanish for the Spanish speakers. That's so that you learn Spanish. He didn't think that was funny.
You gotta watch out, he could have a concealed weapon now.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Community policing.
Yeah. Oh, now the new law, in case you don't know, I don't know how much you guys know, but you know, they did pass a, they outlawed ethnic studies in Arizona. They outlawed ethnic studies. You know why? Because they don't want people of color to resent the white man.
That was the reason.
That's the reason. That's what the superintendent of school said.
And he's running for attorney general, and he says, I'm going to stop La Raza. We don't want La Raza here.
And we don't want no Aslan either. This ain't Aslan, that's what they say. Because Mexicans and Chicanos refer to the Southwest as Aslan. You know, and they think because we call it Aslan that we're gonna have a violent revolution, overthrow and kill everybody. But they're the ones who are armed to the teeth, not us.
Well, let's talk about the census result on the preliminary. I can't find it. We read it. So
tell about it.
Well, in the middle of all this despair and all this ridiculous, like I said, we don't know where are we living. I was telling somebody at lunch that I feel like we're going 100 years back. Estamos regresando 100 años atrás, ¿no? ¿Cómo estamos? And what's going on in our world? Is this the world that we built? Is this the democracy we want? En medio de todo eso salió los resultados preliminares del censo, que están hablando que 60% de la población que ha crecido ha sido los latinos. Los latinos son, tienen la población más joven, mejor educada y más preparada para tomar la economía que los americanos. Los americanos en 20 años van a ser a 30% de la población y nosotros vamos a llegar a 70%. So the census, the preliminary result is very hopeful. Because it's telling us that the Hispanics have the biggest growth in population. Their population is younger. Their median, you know, the 18 to 25. There's 65% of people 18 to 25 years old in America right now are Latinos. 65%. And that they are better educated, they're bilingual, better educated, and ready to take over the economy.
And that they consider themselves Americans who are very proud of their Latin heritage. So really, there's really nothing to be afraid of. You know what I mean? The fear is without foundation.
But you know, that also brings a point that it is scary.
For that,
that in 20 years, if this country continues to go down the road that it's going down, then we're gonna have 65% of people of color, or Latinos, if you will, who are not going to be as educated as people before them, who are not going to have the same access. So we're going to have positions that need educated Latinos, but they're dropping out like flies at high schools right now.
And the ones who want to go to college, we're deporting them.
We're deporting them. And so who's going to be paying for people's Social Security?
That's right.
Who's going to be the one taking care of the people? Who's going to be taking this country to the next level?
That's right.
In 50 years from now.
That's right.
And unless people wake up to that fact, to that America is no longer that the America from the 40s,
yeah,
or the 50s, or the 60s. This is a different America, and we have to embrace everybody as American.
That's right. The face of America is changing.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's always been. But just before that, it was from, when people say white people, they think it's just one it's really so many countries,
yeah.
French, Italians. I mean, it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
But just now the difference is Latinos, which is brown people,
well,
but also now Asians, which is different.
Yeah.
But this has always been. Yeah. It's just...
There's 80,000 undocumented Chinese in the city of San Francisco.
800,000.
800,000. Yeah, nobody said nothing about that.
And San Francisco is a sanctuary city.
Yeah.
Nobody asked for no papers. So community policing happening in San Francisco. The chief of police of San Francisco used to be the chief of police in Mesa until 2 years ago, Jorge Gascon, as a Cubano. He came to Mesa. We were so happy. I was on the selection committee. I couldn't ask for a better man. He was the only official
law enforcement
man in the whole state of Arizona to face our fire and say, you are not coming to my town. You're not terrorizing my neighbors. He came up and said that. And they put so much pressure on him that when San Francisco offered him a better job, guess what? He left. Pero San Francisco es una ciudad santuaria. Ahí el jefe de policía era el jefe de policía que vino de Mesa, Arizona. Es un cubano, Jorge Gascon, que era policía en Los Ángeles. Él era assistant chief en Los Ángeles, fue para Mesa y ahora para San Francisco. Pero en San Francisco, él determinó que nadie, que la policía ahí va a trabajar con la comunidad y que no se va a meter en problemas de inmigración, para nada. Porque el problema de inmigración es un problema federal. Entonces, él dijo que no. Entonces, alguien estaba diciendo, you're asking me about Joe Arpaio and Hitler. This is what other artists have done of Joe Arpaio. It just came out of the paper in Mesa, in Phoenix, the New Times. So here's a picture of Arpaio as Hitler. People crying, stop breaking families apart. Here is the Arpaio head that Sarko made.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Payaso. Aquí está otro, don't run. We have the right to be everywhere in our continent. Mm-hmm. Esta es la foto de una estudiante. She's one of those Dream Act students que está buscando el sueño de poder terminar. And es la foto que ellos fueron a... They chained themselves to the legislation in Phoenix, and that this picture came out in the paper during the protest. Aquí está también un border wall que hicieron otros artistas amigos nuestros. Aquí está otra pintura del border wall. Look at all the Mexicans over here on one side and the American Uncle Sam on the other side.
How did the boycott go on the 29th?
The boycott, the march.
La huelga. Wasn't there going to be a huelga?
It's a boycott. It's all over.
But the 29th was the actual day that the law was going to go into effect. And I thought there was going to be a walkout.
There was a walkout. About 100 people got arrested, including Alfredo Gutierrez, our leader. But anyway, I just wanted to show you these. These speak louder than anything that we can say. This is what the artists are saying. This is my
key. One thing we didn't talk about, too, was all the new prisons being... built along the border, that these are privately run prisons. There's no federal or state oversight. So they can treat the prisoners any way they want. And these are being built to house undocumented.
How is that possible? How is it possible that these private prisons are going to exist?
Well, because the state or federal government doesn't have any money to do it, to build the prisons. So the private companies build the prisons, and then we pay them out of our taxes, but then there's no oversight.
So
we have no say how these prisons are run.
So they're not staffed by...
No, they're all private.
It's all private.
So they're not staffed by law enforcement?
No. They're gulags.
Blackwater.
I understand. Just
Blackwater.
They've been around for a long time.
And you hear about the three prisoners, three white supremacists that broke out of a private prison in Arizona about 5 days ago,
mm-hmm.
and they went and, went to Idaho, and they're here in this area of the world, but they broke out from a private private prison.
So being a person who lives in Washington State and feels a little left out of the loop, how do we hear hearing about those things locally? I mean, you know, just even watching the news, like you don't hear about this stuff on, you don't hear about it on CNN, you don't hear about it on the network news or anything like that.
Well, CNN has been covering.
Yeah.
CMSN companies.
Yeah, I've learned a lot just in the last 2 weeks, sitting down reading a lot of magazines, finding a lot of information out of from the kind of magazines I don't read. They're not Newsweek, you know, but a lot of the Utney magazine, stuff like that, get a lot of information. But these are things that like I'm surprised you don't know about, but at the same time I had to find out about them myself. Right, it's like these things that I tell you about history. I'm telling you this not because I think you're ignorant, but because I find every day that people don't know that the Southwest was Mexico. And then if you tell them it was Mexico, it don't matter anyway. They say, what does that matter? That was then. This is now. What don't you understand about an eagle? In other words, history has no relevance. Yes.
I just wanted to say that I was at a lecture in Sacramento about 3 or 4 weeks ago. About California's current political problems, but they pointed out there that when the California, at the first constituting convention for the Constitution of California, before California became a state, 48 people came, and about 3/4 of them were people who had only lived there for 7 or 8 months, but they were minors, and the people who had lived there the longest who came were people who spoke Spanish and were Mexican, and that actually the first preamble to the first California Constitution was written in Spanish. So that really kind of changed my perspective on how the whole state started, and that's not a piece of history that you learn in school in California at all.
Well, Texas was trying to pass legislation to exclude Cesar Chavez from the history books.
And Martin Luther King.
Well, yeah. We're running out of time. Does anybody else have any questions or even contradictory statements? We welcome that. Last week when we did this, a lot of people asked us, you know, we don't live in Arizona. Well, you know, what can we do? You know, we don't want this to happen. What can we do? And I think what we really need to do is educate ourselves on the issues.
There's that thing there, on the prison.
Yeah, all the things that are going on. And we really have to educate those people who are in favor of this law. You know, it has to be like a huge teaching. We have to raise the consciousness of our friends and neighbors and our family members as well. So that these things, if it happens in Arizona, we're self-deporting. We're not going to wait to be deported. We're going to self-deport. We're looking for sanctuary over here in the Northwest. Because I don't believe that things are going to turn around in Arizona for another generation with all the resentment that's been raised. And, okay.
Just a personal story. I was down in Arizona recently working with Nomás Muertes, and there was a young man who was a soldier who was on a vacation from a tour in Iraq, and he was volunteering with us. His name was Ramon, born and raised in Tucson. Latino, and he says since 2007, every time he leaves his house, he leaves 15 to 20 minutes earlier than he needs to because he's constantly stopped by the Border Patrol. And he said that every time, they always come up with some excuse, but every time he pulls out his driver's license, his military ID is right underneath it, and as soon as they see that, they just let him go, which makes him know that there's nothing, they're really not stopping him for any reason except.
Well, they made it legal in Arizona to profile people.
Yeah.
That's what is so sad. So anybody who's brown is going to get stopped, is going to get harassed.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if it is, I'm a mom, I'm driving my daughter to school, I'm going to get stopped because
mm-hmm.
I'm brown. I'm an American citizen, so are my children.
Yeah, we already haven't heard. This was
yeah.
2 years ago.
In Mesa, my hometown.
We were driving to Mexico. It's not like we were coming. We were born to Mexico. And I had my car on cruise control, and I came into an area where it went down 55. I got pulled over by the sheriff. So I gave him my license. He asked for proof of citizenship, so I gave him my passport, right? And then he asked her for her proof of citizenship. Now, that's against the law. That's against the law.
Yeah, I said, why?
She wasn't driving. So she said, I'm not going to show you my passport. I said, please show me. Love me, give him your passport.
Oh, I want him to take me to jail.
Good.
Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, I have no reason to give.
And leave me bleeding on the side of the road.
So did you have to show it to him?
Well, my husband just said, can you please? And we stopped there. There was a chance.
We're in the middle of the desert. Yeah.
He's looking at me. And I said, you're the one who broke the law. You're the one driving.
Right.
He's stopping you, not me.
Right.
And then the guy just stood there. And I said, can I have your badge number? And I'll give you my ID, but I'm going to. And so he was hesitant about it.
Uh-huh.
Because I said, you're violating my civil rights, sir.
Uh-huh.
I told him right there, looking at him.
Uh-huh.
So I picked up a piece of paper. And then when I opened up my purse, my passport was right there because we were going to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed it to him, but I wrote down his badge number. So I made him feel very uncomfortable.
Okay.
And he never gave you a ticket.
No.